The U.S. Men's National Team has just completed their January window, in which we were hoping for 9 points. We got 6, and that 6 points puts us in a precarious situation as World Cup qualification has not been secured, and it's going to go all the way down to the last window, and that puts a lot of us in a tough situation with a lot of anxiety and a lot of hope and a lot of memories to 2018, whenever things didn't go so well. So we're looking back at the January window, what went right, what went wrong, and I'm bringing in a man who I think has the finger on the pulse of the U.S. soccer world, and especially the discourse in the U.S. soccer world. He is the host of the Scuff podcast, and he is the artist behind such hits as Ojan Luka and 9-Point Window. He is Adam Bells. Bells, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Sam. Appreciate it.
Glad to have you. Let's jump into this first game, because this first game was one that, I mean, it was, looking back, there was a whole lot of discourse after this game about finishing chances and about strikers. I mean, it was the 1-0 game against El Salvador in Columbus, Ohio. Some of the notes that I have from that game is the U.S. dominated possession. They created a lot of chances, failed to score on those chances. The game will be remembered for that big Jesus Ferreira miss. But in my opinion, I think Jesus Ferreira had a pretty good game outside of that and was one of the more effective strikers over that 3-game window. But you can let me know how you feel about that. And I think another thing that we're not really talking about that I think is interesting is that, you know, Chris Richards started that game, and Chris Richards has sort of quietly come along and solidified himself, at least in that top three of that center back position. It's something that, you know, we were hoping for a long time, to see Chris Richards as one of the guys. And all of a sudden he is one of the guys. And I don't know, it's something that's just sort of quietly happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I've always rated Chris Richards. So I guess I'm not surprised to see him break in and become a regular. Too bad he got that injury against Canada. Hopefully he can get back soon. But, it does seem like it's a 3-man center back position right now, at this very moment. Zimmerman, Robinson, and Richards, and they seem pretty interchangeable in Berhalter's mind, right?
Yeah, the big thing from this game was the XG versus the actual G, and the chances created versus the goals scored. What were your thoughts on Jesus Ferreira in that game? And I think also, Christian Pulisic has to be mentioned there, because that was the first game where people were sort of starting to question, like, what's going on with Christian Pulisic in this U.S. Men's National Team setup? He was dropping in a lot, didn't have a lot of joy out there.
Yeah. Yep. I did not think Pulisic played well. I guess everybody shares that opinion. But, you know, with regard to Ferreira, I thought he was good. I agreed with Berhalter about that. And, I guess I have like sort of a brain approach to like a striker's performance, and then like a sort of emotional approach, mm-hmm. which are both happening simultaneously in my mind, inside me. But the brain approach is, hey, like the cerebral part of me would say, hey, Ferreira was great. You know, he got into some really good spots. Not everybody finishes their chances. Everybody regresses to their XG over time. So we want a striker who's getting into chances. You know, he not only did he have the big miss on that volley coming across like the back post, he also created a good shot for himself with his left foot that he put over the bar. And my co-host Greg made the point, I don't know how many of our strikers can do that. You know, take a deft little touch to lift it over the defender, get around him, and then get a good shot off. You know, they can do it sometimes, but I think Ferreira is the trickiest in those tight spaces of our striker
options. Yeah, he does that a lot. I remember the game against Mexico, he had that little touch that opened up space for Weston McKennie to get that second goal. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the game against El Salvador, he created that opportunity for Musa, and he chested it for Musa, and Musa put it over the bar. So that tight space in the box, he seems to be, I think, the only striker that we have that we've seen on a regular basis be able to just operate in those tight spaces and create for others around him.
I have a personal axe to grind on this, which is that I really want there to be a Mexican-American star on the national team. And so I favor Ricardo Pepi for that reason. You know, I want him to succeed. I want him to be the 9 for the U.S. I think long-term he has a good chance of being that. He just hasn't quite done it. And I think it's true. Ferreira was more effective in this last window than Pepi was in his opportunities.
And now a word from today's sponsor. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy betting new year as we continue our march towards the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all betting action in 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website. Sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, and of course soccer, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available in 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
I think my axe to grind would be Sargent. I want Sargent to be the guy. I think that he's just the most complete striker if he can score goals, if he can do it in the box, and we haven't seen that. And it just goes back to this discussion of the strikers for the U.S. men's national team. It seems like a box of broken toys right now. It's just a bunch of guys that can do some things but not everything, and nobody seems to be scoring goals right now. So even though I don't know about Ferreira, man. I mean, he's got the DP money at Dallas this year. He's going to be getting a lot of play at Dallas, and we've seen lately that if you're pretty good at FC Dallas, that means you're at least good enough to play, you know, at a lower tier Bundesliga team. Like, that's been pretty secure.
Was he making like $2 million? Salary's going to be $2 million now?
Yeah, right around Holy there. Yeah, smokes. It's really impressive. Yeah. So. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but at least I don't think Ferreira gets quite as much respect as some of the other guys, just because he's got the false nine denomination over him, and where he plays and the type of game he plays, and the fact that he's not getting those big headers and those big acrobatic goals. He doesn't get a lot of goals really at all, but I think he's just a very effective player that we could put out there, and one of the few players that is actually contributing in that nine role, at least in recent games.
Yeah, I mean, Greg, my co-host, is a huge Ferreira fan, so it's like almost like a running bit on our podcast now, how much he loves Jesus Ferreira. So he gets plenty of respect from our podcast, but yeah, I think you're right. He doesn't fit the profile of like the classic number nine, and I think we all kind of want that, you know, the big guy who goes flying through the air and heads it in, or you know, broad-shouldered hold-up play, that kind of thing. And we're not going to get that from Jesus.
Let's move on to the Canada game. I think Canada was the game where, like, boy, there was a lot of noise and a lot of chatter after that Canada game. I mean, heading into that game, everybody was hoping for a win. I mean, you're getting Canada without Alphonso Davies and without Steven Eustachio, so it seemed like the opportunity was there. Looking at the rosters on paper, the U.S. seemed to have a talent advantage. And even during that game, I mean, the U.S. did have a possession advantage, controlled the ball, did really well in the defensive third and the middle third, and it was just that final third. Some of the notes from that game, of course, were Greg Berhalter's post-game comments, where he said the U.S. had a dominant performance. We've never seen such a dominant performance in an away game, just didn't get the result, something like that. Really set off U.S. men's national team fans everywhere. Pulisic was not very good at all. And for me, I think it was a reality check game. A game where I think I feel like the discourse afterwards was so intense and so angry at Greg, because I feel like there was a lot of us have built up these players just so high in our minds as these players that are so talented that they can just overcome anything. And I think we saw against Canada that, although we did have the more talented team, Canada had something else. You know, they did have these experienced players who were grizzled, who had grit, and who had all this stuff that we kind of dismissed as not important, because we don't have that in our current team. And we saw what, you know, a lot of people are saying is like a classic USA versus Mexico game, where in this instance, the USA was the Mexico team, the team with the talent, the team that dominated possession, the team that can move the ball. And Canada was that old school USA team that was just solid defensively and were able to counterattack with fury. And they were able to get two bys. What were your thoughts on that that Canada game?
Yeah, it's like three or four different things. The Canada is savvier than us. I think their team and their manager are better at managing games. And they're adaptable. They're tactically adaptable. They play different ways in different games. We're really not. You know, we play one way.
Not at all, no.
And we play one way, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then And then the other thing is, like, we have struggled to score goals, particularly against a low block, the whole qualifying cycle, you know? And that's a really hard thing to do in soccer, right? It's difficult to score when the other team has two banks of four inside their penalty box or close to it. But we haven't demonstrated an ability to do that, and this game was no different. And then, you know, we get the mistake, sort of a cascading series of mistakes from Matt Turner and Miles Robinson, and the nice play by Kyle Aaron, and then we're chasing that game, and that was not how we wanted that game to go. So, you know, going down 1-0 in the first 10 minutes, worst possible outcome. But we couldn't figure it out, you know? I mean, soccer's a finicky game, man, because, like, what if McKennie puts that header, you know, 2 feet to the right or 2 feet to the left, the one right at the end of the first half that Bourgeois made the good save on? Maybe it's a totally different situation. It's just like, that's variance. That's a little bit unlucky, but yeah, we couldn't solve it. And we couldn't manage that game in a way that gave us a chance to win. And that's I think pretty par for the course in tough away games for the US.
Yeah. I think you're speaking to sort of the two sides of my brain that are looking at that game. Like, I do understand that there is variance in soccer and that the best team doesn't always win. I mean, we saw the other day that Manchester United lost to what was like a second division team in the FA Cup something like that. Mm. I mean, and that's not something that's like a huge shock. Like, that happens every year somewhere in the world. Some top team loses to some second division team. I mean, it in a cup game, it happens every year. It happens in soccer. It's very difficult to break down a team that's playing that defensive. And if they happen to get a goal up on you, then it becomes three times as difficult to break down that team. That's just part of it. But at the same time, there are some things about this game that are scary for US fans. I think the first one with Greg Berhalter is the lack of flexibility. Like you mentioned, that's been discussed ad nauseum at this point. I mean, the team wants to play one way, and if that's not working, we still play that way. And what we're not seeing from this team is that grit, is that fight, is that need to just, you know, whatever it takes to get a goal in the back of the net. I don't know if we have that type of player on this team. Like, there's a few guys that might qualify for that, but I mean, how many guys do we have on the squad that are like Brian McBride, broken nose, bloody face type dudes that are like, you know, just going to get after it? Maybe they'll get there. Maybe they'll get there a little bit whenever they get older. But at the moment, I don't know if we have that. I think Canada has a lot of that. And I think that was one of the things that I took away from this game. Like, there is something to be a grown man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think sort of maybe a little more boring thing that happened is, in our system, against a low block, when we have all the possession, which Canada was happy to concede to us, I'm not saying we dominated the game. I don't agree with Greg Berhalter on that. But in that system, we need our wingers to make a difference, to be difference makers. We didn't have Tim Weah because of the vaccination snafu, you know, whatever. And then Christian Pulisic played badly. Like, we got him isolated against Alistair Johnston on the left side inside the penalty box, and he just kind of, I don't know, dribbled into a crowd and fell on his bottom. And, like, that's, you know, if he's not making a difference and Tim Weah is not there, we're going to have a hard time. We're going to have a hard time breaking somebody down. I'll acknowledge that maybe we need more of like a Brian McBride, broken nose kind of guy, but it's just hard to, like, I don't know, how do you engineer that? You know, it's just going to take time, and we need people to kind of emerge. I feel like McKennie has some of that vibe.
I think a lot of that is just going through wars, man. It's just experience and just having played a long time. I don't know if that's something that you ever really associate with a really young player like the US has. And that's kind of the reality check for me, is just like, this team is very young, and that's going to rear its head at times. And I think we saw that in the Canada game. Just that lack of whatever the U.S. had against Algeria, you know, whenever Landon Donovan scored his goal, whatever that thing was, is not really present in this team. We don't really see a lot of, like, come from behind, gritty, you know, whatever it takes to make it happen. I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with that.
No?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I mean, the Algeria game was one game that, you know, at the end went our way. If we lose that game, if we get unlucky and lose that game, then nobody thinks of those guys as gritty. I don't know. I feel like the grit thing is, it's a post facto sort of explanation for things. A little bit.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's something that's come to be been associated with the U.S. national team for a number of years, and it's something that a lot of the players point to. I'm talking about post players. I mean, Hercules Gomez kind of had that scathing after game report on the U.S. national team about that. I heard Eric Winalda kind of have similar sentiments. Of course, Winalda says stuff like that a lot, directed at this team in particular. I've heard.
Well, let me ask you this: was the win over Mexico in Nations League, was that a gritty win?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a very ugly game. Yeah,
I mean that's true. Yeah, yeah, that's a fair
Gold
point.
Cup run.
The Gold Cup run was a different team. I think we'll get to that in that third game. But I feel like Kellen Acosta brings a lot of that energy to this squad. I think he's one of the few guys that I think really qualifies for that, and I think. Whenever you see him in the squad, like the squad just has a different personality. Not saying that he's like better than Tyler Adams or should start over Tyler Adams. I just think you see that different energy that he brings to the table. Not just whenever the game's in play, but also whenever, you know, the whistle's blown and there's scrums and there's all kinds of after action happening. He just brings that. And maybe it's also because of the set pieces he brings. And maybe it is time that we move on to that that 3-0 game against Honduras. The U.S. gets a win that they absolutely had to win. You were at the game, right? And it was brutally cold.
Was.
There was a lot was made of that before and after the game. Incredible set-piece delivery by Kellen Acosta, and the U.S. get the 3 points that they needed to get.
Yeah, that was a dominant performance from the U.S., as it should have been. Because, you know, as we all know, Honduras had nothing to play for. They're not particularly interested in being out there in zero-degree weather. So, yeah, that's a big goal from Weston McKennie to sort of take the pressure off. Like you said, a delightful set-piece delivery from Kellen Acosta. And then, you know, kind of the game was over at that point almost. And it's wonderful to get an early goal. We finally got that. Get a goal on a set-piece. That was our first set-piece goal of the whole cycle. Which is, I think a pretty, up until the Honduras game, a pretty bad mark against Berhalter, you know? If we can't break down a low block and we're not scoring goals on set pieces and everybody's playing against us with a low block, and we gotta figure that out. So it's very encouraging that we got some goals on set pieces. And I agree with you that Kellen Acosta brings a level of savvy and sort of cleverness and gamesmanship that we do. That is really valuable for this team. I think even much more so than Tyler Adams. Even though Tyler Adams is a higher level player, I think sort of indisputably, it's great to have Acosta out there kind of mixing it up, like you said. And then the fact that he had a lot of time and space in the midfield, but he still, with that caveat, he still played really well. Switched the point of attack, delivered those set pieces for three different goals. Happy that he has sort of returned to the fold in the national team after a couple years of exile.
Well, speaking of players that were seemingly exiled from the national team, what about Luca Della Torre? I mean, he's a player that I think a lot of the fans were calling for in a big way, a player that has been a part of the national team but hasn't really got much opportunity. I think he played a little bit in the Jamaica home game in October, but outside of that, I'm not sure if he's featured in qualifiers at all. So he gets this opportunity in this Honduras game. He gets the start, and he has a great game. He has an undeniably great game. I mean, he does a lot of what Yunus Musa does on the field, which is get the ball from the defensive third to the attacking third. Now, the big caveat that you have to say is, you know, Honduras was not really interested, especially in that second half, which was where a lot of Luca Della Torre's big penetrating runs came from. I mean, it's rare that you see a soccer game at that the international level where a player has so much time and space. I mean, there were moments where they showed Luca Della Torre on the TV, on the camera shot, where there just wasn't anybody around him. I mean, that's highly unusual. So I think that needs to be said whenever considering his game. But at the same time, I mean, depth at the eight position has been something that was lacking from the U.S. for a while. I know you guys on the Scuff Show had a lot to say about the fourth eight That was a big discussion, and it seems like, at least at this moment, it seems like Gianluca Busio and Luca Della Torre have kind of come in, edged out Sebastian Legette and Christian Roldan. But we still got to see these guys get tested against some of the tougher teams in CONCACAF, and I think we'll have an opportunity to see that in that next window. But what did you make of Luca Della Torre's performance?
Same as you. I mean, with big caveats about the weakness of the opponent and the game state, he showed why a lot of us have wanted him to be called up and played more often, which is his ability to push the game. He has an instinct to drive the game forward, and he has the technical ability to do it on the half turn and find a good pass. He's a pretty tidy player from box to box, you know. And I think the knock on him is he hasn't been all that dangerous inside the opponent's penalty box, hasn't been goal dangerous or like hit a lot of killer passes for Heracles, or for the U.S. I think he was great, like you said, and we need to see more of him. He's a second choice midfielder. You know, it's Musa McKennie Adams.
One thing I've been kind of wrestling with in my mind is Gianluca Busio versus Luca Della Torre. I'm wondering how these guys kind of fit. I know I've been a big fan of Busio and see what he does in the Italian league, and I think he's very similar to Della Torre in that I'm not sure how it translates to like an away CONCACAF game. How it translates whenever like really heavy fouls are coming in, whenever you're going up for headers and guys are putting their elbows in the back of your head and you're really getting beat up. I think Busio kind of wilted against that in that first game that he had away against Jamaica. I wonder how Della Torre is going to stand up to that. Where do you think that Busio and Della Torre kind of stack up against each other as it pertains to the depth chart in the national team?
I prefer Luca Della Torre at this moment. Because I think he can carry the ball and he can ride challenges and you know, Busio can ping the ball all over the field. He's very, very elegant on the ball, but he's not going to dribble, you know, 30 yards and push the game forward the way Luca Della Torre does. And I think Busio's been a safe passer basically since he broke through as a professional in Kansas City. I think his instinct is to play safe, and Della Torre is much more of a swashbuckler. You know, he's ready to find somebody forward. So I prefer that. I prefer Luca Della Torre for those reasons at this moment. You know, Busio's so young. He is the future of America. I'm just kidding. But so we'll see.
Yeah. It's we're always prisoners of the moment, and I do wonder what would have happened if Busio was on that field against Honduras and he had that kind of time and space. I think we'd be all excited about Busio's game, but I think we'd still have the same questions moving forward that we have about Della Torre right now. I think we kind of wrapped up the three games. We're heading into this March window, and we still have everything on the line to play for. I think the big boon that the U.S. has right now is that Gio Reyna's back on the field, and even in his brief 30-minute cameo this weekend for Dortmund, he looked pretty good. He still looked very dangerous, and he still does a lot of the things that I think this U.S. squad kind of desperately needs right now. The big question about Busio, at least for the national team, is where does he play on the field? Is he going to be a winger? Is he going to be an eight? If he's a winger, what does that mean for Weah and Pulisic? If he's an eight, what does that mean for Musa? You know, how do you think Gio Reyna returns to this national team, and how do you think that affects things?
I think he probably returns as a winger, because that's how Berhalter's played him. Now, whether that's the right decision is another question. I don't know. I feel okay with Pulisic being a super sub for now. Like I would start Reyna and Weah, and then have Pulisic coming off the bench. He seems to have done very well in that role for the U.S. over the past few months, and he's not been that good. I'm talking about Pulisic. So yeah, try Reyna as the left winger, and you know he's gonna tend to tuck in. That gives room for Anthony Robinson to make those bombing runs up the touchline, and I think that duo matches up pretty well with each other. If Berhalter plays him as an eight, you know, if maybe Musa isn't available or he gets preferred to Musa as an eight, I will not complain that much. I'll be excited to see that.
Yeah, he's one of those players that can be effective wherever he plays. I think that the question I have is, like, where do I want Reyna on the field? And that's, like, I want him with the ball at the top of the box. You know, I want him to be able to get that ball right there. And what position, at least in Berhalter's system, is going to be the most effective for that? And I think it's the winger position right now. I think if he plays eight, there'll have to be some changes to the way the eights play. I mean, currently, the eights in Berhalter's system drop back a lot. They do a lot of defensive dirty work, and they do cover for Robinson and Dest whenever they get forward. And I don't really want, you know, Gio Reyna covering for Robinson and Dest whenever they get forward. I want him a part of that. So there'll have to be some reworking of the system, but I mean, it could work. I'm not saying it couldn't. I mean, he's a phenomenal player.
I guess I do worry, like, you know, one of the problems with Pulisic in this past window was he didn't make enough runs in behind to stretch the back line from the wing. Apparently something Berhalter really wants from his wingers. Now, Tim Weah does it beautifully. Pulisic didn't do it. It's kind of hard to imagine Gio Reyna doing it. You know, he's not that's not his game, really. But I mean, he did almost score on a run in behind for Dortmund over the weekend. So that's a appealing thing.
Yeah, he has done it. The other thing about Pulisic is he just wasn't effective whenever he got the ball. I mean, what was the stat in the Canada game or the El Salvador game that he lost the ball half the time that he had it? Like, of the 30 times that he had it, he lost possession 15 times. I don't see Gio Reyna having that same issue. I think Gio Reyna is way better at retaining possession and doing something positive with the ball. So I don't think it's as big an issue. And Pulisic's just in a funk right now. But again, I think Gio Reyna could be effective kind of wherever you line him up. There's even people that want to see him at the striker position to see what he could do there. And, you know, maybe he could do that too. I mean, I think he's that good. I think he could play really anywhere in the attacking third of the field and be effective for the U.S.
Yeah, it's funny. I agree with you. I think he's that good too. We still haven't really seen him with the national team that much. You know, that Nations League final and one of the qualifiers so far. So there's still a lot we can get out of him.
Yeah, he's got 9 games for the national team. He's got 4 goals in 9 games for the national team. That's pretty wild, especially considering one of them was, you know, or 2 of them were Nations League games that were really competitive, and one of them was that El Salvador game that was a World Cup qualifier. So of his 9 caps, 3 of them were super competitive games, and he's got 4 goals for the national team. That's a pretty good start for a career. One thing I do want to discuss with you that I think really sets the SCUF podcast apart in the crowded U.S. soccer community is you guys are so phenomenal at bringing new terms, words, and phrases into the lexicon of the U.S. soccer world. And I have like a few that I wrote down, and I want to kind of go through these. And I want to know, like, do you guys intentionally try to come up with these things, or is it just on the fly? Like, I have a few right here, like battleship. A defender is a battleship. Usually John Brooks is referred to as a battleship.
Yeah.
I've heard you guys say do a defender. I've never heard that outside of the SCUF podcast. Of course, the parabola, the Josh Sargent parabola is a classic. half space merchant, I think, is something that you guys brought to the table. Little brothered, associated with Brendan Aaronson, to be little brothered, I think is a classic. And the last one is one, it's from a while back. I don't even know if you remember this, but I think you guys call it the scuffed theorem, which is this idea that the U.S. was going to continue to develop players at the same rate over, like, once every 4 years or so. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. Is this something that you guys intentionally do, or is this just all on the fly?
Well, I got to admit that, like, of the ones you just read, I think they're all Greg Velasquez's coinages. And except for the parabola, which is from Vince, Vince Irvin. So yeah, I think Greg, I haven't discussed it with him, but he does make an effort to, like, come up with, like, a memorable way of making his point, you know, and he does that. I think he's really good at that. And I think Vince does the same thing. And he's a more recent addition to the podcast, but he's been recording with me and Waukee for 3 months now. So Yeah, it's I don't people always like compliment me on the on those coinages, and I have to be like, yeah, I didn't come up with hardly any of those. I think the one I came up with was cage match that caught on, you know, he wins in the cage. But that's like my only claim to fame. It's all Greg and now Vince and Waki. So I'm just the water carrier. I'm the piano mover. They're the piano players.
Well, credit to Greg Velasquez, because they're so good, it's hard not to just use them. Because like, I mean,
yeah.
John Brooks as a battleship. I mean, what a perfect way to describe that player. Brendan Aaronson getting little brothered. Like, that is just, it's perfect, yeah, it takes, you know? It's so hard not to use those. Now, one thing that you have brought to the U.S. soccer world is these songs. I mean, you've released a few songs at this point. There was the 9-point window one, which was a great song, and just the moment didn't live up to the song, and it's a shame. I hope that we get a 9-point right. window so that the song can get its due. O Gianluca was an absolute banger, and the Ricardo Pepi song. What kind of inspired you to bring these songs to the table?
Oh man, I don't know. I actually don't really remember why I did that with the O Gianluca song, but the O Gianluca song, I don't know. I was on my porch watching some clips on Y Scout of his game against AC Milan, and I was like, I'm sorry, Gianluca, I underestimated you. You know, you are an elegant player at a high level. So that was the sentiment, and then I don't know. I just started singing. I have a hard time figuring out what do people really think about the music, because I think there's a fair number of people who are like, this is weird and like not very cool, and but then there are people who are like, yes, do more songs. So I don't have a good sense of public opinion about the music. But we tried to sing at a big get together in St. Paul, and got some pretty good participation. Had some song sheets. We sang O Gianluca and a song about Serginho Dest that I have not released to the public. So we're going to be in Orlando. We're going to try to do, I learned some things in St. Paul. We're going to try to get like almost like a choir going to build like critical mass. And then hopefully it spreads through the whole bar or the whole tailgate, whatever we're doing. So I'm still hopeful that the music can catch on more than it has. But yeah, thanks for
absolutely, man. I mean, that's such a cool and unique and creative thing that's being brought to this space. And I think it's so interesting because this U.S. soccer space has just been so fan generated, man. I mean, so much of the stuff is grassroots stuff that's kind of come up. One of the grassroots thing that's kind of come up in this year has been Waki, and Waki's a co-host on your show, but his breakdowns, I remember whenever he was releasing just comp videos, and then his comp videos sort of transitioned into comp with some analysis, and then he started putting his personality to his analysis. And then his comp videos transition to kind of stuff that's going on between the whistles as opposed to during the game. And it's just caught fire. And you see his comps end up on like the national brands sites and stuff. It's commented on by just about everybody throughout the U.S. soccer world from the top to the bottom. And I do have a feeling that Greg Berhalter is now aware of at least the back pass thing. I think he's aware that people are looking out for that.
Oh, he's got to be. Yeah, he's got to be aware of it. Yeah. I it is crazy to remember that Waki was watching like DC United Academy games just like a couple years ago and cutting the footage of Kevin Paredes or Moses Nyman in like a U-17 game. He doesn't do that anymore. He's gone to the big leagues. But I mean credit to him, man. Those videos are clever, you know? Like that doesn't just happen. You got to be pretty smart to do that. And they're so efficient, you know, they're so fast. They move so fast. So I'm a fan along with everybody else.
Yeah, and having him on your podcast has been tremendous. I really enjoy his perspective, and it's so different from a lot of the of what you hear in most soccer podcasts, and hearing about like the small German towns or whatever, and like their whatever they're known for. I don't know. I really dig that. Anyway, Adam, I think me I've too. Taken up enough of your time at this point. I wanted to thank you for coming on the show. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find your content?
@ScuffedPod on Twitter is sort of like home base. scuffedhq.com is our website. And then you can find the podcast on any podcast platform. Scuffed, the Scuffed Soccer Podcast.
Absolutely.
Check it out.
Probably my favorite U.S. soccer podcast, the one that I recommend to everybody. You guys,
thanks, man.
Greg Velasquez is just a tremendous asset. Waki's a tremendous asset. Vince, I really enjoy Vince a lot, too. And you, of course, just keeping it all together. So thank you, guys. Thank you and everyone at the Scuffs Podcast
you,
for your contributions to U.S. soccer and helping educate all of us along the way. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. If you haven't subscribed, hit that subscribe button. If you haven't, hit the like button. Hit the like button. Thank you guys so much for watching. Shout out to my Tier 2 members, Manuel Oliveras and Mike Irish. For Adam Bells, my name is Sam, and this is the Yankaport brought to you by Bet Online.